Could the Greece train crash have been avoided? Live from the BBC World Service, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Leanna Byrne. The fallout from Tuesday's train crash has brought attention to the era of privatisation that followed Greece's financial crisis in 2015. While an investigation is still ongoing, there are claims that insufficient funding has been worsening the safety of Greece's rail network. Greece was bailed out in 2015 by its creditors after economic crisis. The BBC's Katie Silver spoke to Yanis Varoufakis, Greece's opposition leader, who was also Greece's finance minister during the country's financial crisis.
I was invited as the leader of the parliamentary party by engineers and maintenance staff in two different sites where our railways, our trains, our rolling stock, both for our railways and our metro system in Athens are being serviced. The reason why these engineers and maintenance staff invited me was because they were very worried. They wanted us, members of parliament, to have a look at the way in which they were deprived of the basic tools of the trade for making the railway safe. To point out that staff had been culled by one third, and effectively to warn us that we were facing a very serious train tragedy around the corner. That was only 2 months ago.
So who do you believe has to answer for this? The current government, the IMF, for austerity measures that were handed down? We understand, of course, the transport minister has stood down.
Their collective lot. It's not a personal issue. It's not the poor station master. It's not the hapless minister who resigned. This is a long, drawn-out process of creating a system whose only absolutely certain outcome was a tragedy. It was a tragedy in the making.
Rail? Do you believe that rail was one of the public services that was most or worst hit by austerity measures?
No, it wasn't the worst hit. We've had a similar catastrophe regarding our electricity network. So during this cost of living crisis and energy crisis following the Ukraine war especially, the people of Greece who have been so downbeaten by austerity and crisis now for 13 years have had to pay some of the most exorbitant electricity bills. But at least we don't have mass death as a result of a failure of the electricity system, whereas a transportation system, whether it is airlines or trains or motorways, well, the potential for sharp rises in the death toll are much, much greater, of course.
Yanis Varoufakis, Greece's former finance minister, speaking there. Chinese scientists are leading their American counterparts in dozens of fields of technological research. That's according to a new report by the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. It found that China is ahead of the US in 37 out of 44 critical technologies across sectors such as space, robotics, defence, artificial intelligence and biotechnology. Its lead author is Dr. Jamie Gator.
What has often been held out as the case is that you can't really achieve innovation without free markets and venture capital support. And this actually turns that idea on its head a little bit, and it shows that central control and very close integration between the government and universities and the private sector, in this case, is actually delivering really top quality research that other scientists around the world regarding as being on the forefront.
What are the lessons for the US and other countries in the West?
We make 23 forward-leaning recommendations across four key areas. So we talk about boosting investment, driving commercialization, and building talent pipelines is the first one. The next one is global partnerships. The third one is supercharging intelligence efforts. And the fourth one is moonshots. So in moonshots, we're talking about really big ideas like establishing a technology act similar to the CHIPS Act that the US enacted recently. We need a strategic critical technology step up, and yes, that it should be a wake-up call for democratic nations.
Dr. Jamie Gaydor there. Now, I'm sure you've heard of South Korea's entertainment exports, K-pop and K-drama like Squid Games, which is thought to have created almost $900 million in value for Netflix. But actually, Korean reality TV could be the next big thing. A new Netflix survival show, Physical 100, sees 100 physically impressive humans battle it out for the title of Most Impressive Body. Here's the BBC's correspondent in Seoul, Jean McKenzie.
This is one of the most defining moments of Physical 100. Female wrestler Jang is spurring on her team as it struggles to drag a 1.5-ton ship through sand and up a ramp. On paper, they're the weakest team, but miraculously, they complete the task. Think of this as the real-life Squid Game. Except nobody dies. It's become Netflix's most popular non-English programme around the world, making it the first reality TV show ever to grab this top spot. 3, 2, 1.
The show has been such a surprising success that they have cobbled together an event for fans at the last minute along the river here in Seoul, and 50 of the contestants have turned up. Why do you like the show so much?
Oh, because there's a lot of hot people.
The industry here is now watching the success of Physical 100 with excitement. Last week, Amazon Prime bought its first Korean reality TV show, Ginny's Kitchen.
Want to come to our restaurant?
It features a group of celebrities attempting to run a street food restaurant in Mexico. It's been made by one of Korea's biggest entertainment companies, CJ. Sebastian Kim is their sales director.
We have around, 200 producers. These 200 producers are like scratching their head to make a better show every day. This opens a great opportunity for them. If these kind of shows can travel outside Korea, that means the more funding coming in from that show, that gives them more freedom to produce a bigger show, a better show.
Not for me. I'm more of a Real Housewives type of girl. Anyway, BBC's Jean McKenzie there, and thanks for listening to the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.